What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL. Joined, as always, by my co-host, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, what's going on, brother?
Man, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It literally has been just a gorgeous day today. And I can't complain too bad. Trying to fight off some of the doomsayers on Twitter. It's a losing battle, but I'm putting my as much as I can in on it.
Right. And as y'all can see that we are joined by two guests, Joe Patrick from 92.9 The Game. Joe, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Just got back from Flowery Branch not too long ago. Got to hear from Chris Lindstrom and Jesse Bates, as well as Kyle Smith. And it was interesting to hear more thoughts about the draft, which I'm sure we'll get into here. And just good to see the players again. You know, it's been a while since we've seen them, so it was good to catch up.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, Dave, you're going to have to unmute yourself because I tried to unmute and it didn't work. But first time we were joined by the Falcoholic himself, or at least the man who runs the Falcoholic, is Dave Choate. How are you, sir?
I'm great, man. You know, happy to talk some draft. I can never talk enough.
Doesn't seem like it. Like 4+ hours of streaming both for night one and night two definitely just wasn't enough. By Saturday, no. I thought I was getting sick because my throat was like gravel. So, definitely can't get in it enough. I like this already. Right off the rip, Willie Dog says, "Let's go Red Stallions." Let's go Red Stallions. I thought that was good. And he also follows it up with a $5 tip, which we appreciate greatly. He says,
appreciate it, Mr. Doc.
Man, look at the slate of the panelists. It's going to be a fire tonight. We upgraded the QB room. Can't wait to see how Coach Morris pulls it together. Yeah, that's going to be the talk of the summer, right, is how all this stuff comes together. And, Joe, I guess I want to start with you being up there at Flowery Branch as you have been these past few days. Obviously, the big shock of the night, or the big shock of the draft, was drafting Penix at 8. What was your, initial reaction to that?
It's funny because I was actually doing a web stream live with 11 Alive here locally. They're channel 11. So I was literally talking into a camera holding a microphone while I was seeing the pit go down. I was just outside the media room looking through the window at the TV that I could see. And as I'm doing this, I realized once I started that, okay, the Falcons pick is going to be made while I'm on. And I'm kind of deciding, you're just thinking about, okay, is it going to be an edge? Is it going to be a corner? You know, who's it going to be?
Right.
And then when I see I saw Michael Penix first, the picture, and I hadn't seen any of the tweets that I guess were getting leaked out about 5 minutes before the pick went down, because I'd already started this thing. So I hadn't seen anything. And I was just, as you can imagine, in complete shock when I saw them, when I saw them do that. And I honestly, it was such shock that it actually takes a little bit of time to actually put it together in your head. And then even then, that night, I was just waiting for the press conference. At that point, I think everybody was just, we all had so many questions, we couldn't wait to get them out to the decision makers. And so it was just, kind of scratching. I think something like that's always shocking when you first hear it, just because it's the last thing you expect. But for me, at least, I don't know about you guys, but for me, at least, the more I have heard the rationale behind it, I think it does start to make more sense. It certainly kind of relies on this foundation that Michael Penix is going to be a franchise quarterback, that, he is the guy that they've identified him to be. And if he is that, it's going to work out. And if not, it won't. So we're going to see how it plays out.
Exactly. So Dave, I'm going to throw it over to you and kind of get your initial reaction on the Penix pick. What were you thinking when that went splashed across your screen?
I think my first thought was, I can't believe they actually did it. And the reason I thought that was early April, when they sent the contingent out to see Michael Penix, I've been kicking around the idea in my head for a couple months that they keep talking about a third quarterback. They haven't, extended Taylor Heineke's cap hit into next year because they're going to seriously consider drafting one. And I was like, maybe it'll be Penix. Maybe they'll get him in the second, trade up to the end of the first. But I said right in the article where the rest of the pieces I put together, I was like, but there's no way they'll do that at number 8. But then, the night before the draft, I decided, just in case they do something crazy, I'm going to write up an article in case they draft Michael
Penix.
I was surprised that they actually did it at the end of the day, but I guess I had kind of been making peace with it ahead of time. So I was not as shocked as I was like wondering what the rationale was going to be and wondering what the reaction was going to be. And of course, the reaction wasn't hard to figure out, but the rationale I did need to hear for myself. So it's it is shocking. I do understand both why they chose that particular quarterback to kind of hitch their wagon to and why they did it. I think the issue, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more here, is it's like, do you trust after the last 6+ years that, you know, this regime can get this precarious balancing act right? And I don't know. We'll find out.
Right. And before we move much further than that, Fred, we appreciate you greatly. Loved our draft. I think Penix was the best QB in the draft. That's definitely an opinion. In my opinion, Kirk will only be here a year. And it's interesting that, like, without either one of them taking a snap, this is where we're already at, you know. Which, you know, at the end of the day, like, my thought process, and I even said on stream, is like, I don't mind the player. Like, Penix, as far as, like, where you're at in the draft, you explored, tried to get up into the big, you know, into the top three, that you got the door slammed in your face, which arguably you figured you were going to. So I have no problem with them taking a QB, because when you don't have a QB, you got to take as many swings as possible, right? It was just the process of, you know, signing Kirk and then, you know, drafting. But the really funny thing was, back on March 1st, now, one of your constituents who's written for you a handful of times reminded me of this on Twitter, Everett Glaze. He retweeted a poll that I had tweeted out in sarcasm, mind you. the poll was like, which situation intrigues you? Kirk with Penix, Baker with McCarthy, Russ with Nix. And it was out of complete and utter sarcasm. Because I was like, there's no way, right? And it's hilarious because everybody, like 66% of the people went with Kirk and Penix. And now I'm assuming 66% of the people are like losing their minds about it in a sense, right? So.
Well, because at that point it was a hypothetical. It was abstract, right?
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It wasn't reality. And now the reality hits and you're like, wait, what? Hold up.
So moving into that night up at Flowery Branch, you talk about the, you know, questions like immediately start formulating in your head. Like, what was the vibe really like in that room, Joe?
It was, like during the rest of the draft, it was fine. You know, people were working, people were getting their stories in and everything. It was just normal. But then what I thought was interesting was when Terry and Raheem came into the room, and normally when a team makes a top 10 pick, they're bouncing into the room. You know, this is going to be one of their star players. They can't wait to talk about him. Can't wait to talk about how this player is going to transform the team. Is going to lead them to, you know, much more success than they had the previous year. You know, we've heard all that happen before, right here in Atlanta. And obviously that was, you know, not the case in this instance. And it's interesting because I think that just going into night one of the draft, they had this plan to come away with two players, to come away with Michael Penix and to come away with an edge rusher who they were going to trade up and get. We can talk about that a little bit later, but the fact that second pick didn't come through, I think made it a lot more awkward of a press conference than they wanted it to be. And it made the tenor of the questioning a lot more, you know, there was a lot of questioning about the team dynamics. What was the fallout going to be with Kirk Cousins having just signed this deal? Was he kind of, those were the kinds of thoughts that I think were running through a lot of reporters' heads and through a lot of fans' heads. And it's probably the kinds of things that, you know, Terry and Raheem would prefer not to talk about. In fact, they were, you know, they flat out were not responding to a lot of the questioning about, you know, those interactions that they had with Kirk that night. And you know, I understand why. It's just totally uncomfortable, totally awkward. And it just kind of, it sets a really weird table for them to try to, you know, use this opportunity to promote the team, which is ultimately what like the NFL draft is so much about for these teams. It's a chance for them to, you know, market their product and get fans excited. And that's kind of the last thing that fans were feeling that night.
Yeah. Like, that is definitely like we had a, you know, we had a pretty big panel the first night, and I think we had at least, I know one, maybe even two guys like get up and walk away when the pick. And then we had poor Savion Mixon was shell shocked for the last 2 hours. He just sat there like, oh my God, I have to write about this or something. You know, it's like you could just tell the dread on his face, which was, I felt for him on that. But like all I had to do the next morning was get up and drive a truck. And, you know, it was, but it did bring in, like, we did get into the human aspect of it. Like, so, you know, Dave, is that something that you like that what did you consider with about like the human aspect of it? Are you in the camp of, hey, look, I just paid you $100 million, you know, guaranteed, go out there and play,
or suck it up, Buttercup.
Right. Suck it up, Buttercup. Or, you know, are you more into like the thought process of like, regardless of the money, the psyche is still there, you know?
Yeah. I kind of lean toward the latter, right? Like I think ultimately Kirk Cousins is the level of professional that it's not going to be something he ever outwardly makes a big deal out of, right? That's just not going to happen. But I think one of the reasons that he wanted to sign that deal with Atlanta was because he felt wanted, right?
Right.
He's at the end of his career. He was looking for some security. Minnesota was kind of like, we're going to replace you sooner than later. I want to go to Atlanta where I'm going to win and I'm going to be celebrated here at the end of my career. So from that aspect, you look at a guy who chose Atlanta in part, I think, for that level of security. And then that evaporates like, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks after he signs that deal. I'd be mad too. You know, like you have to kind of be honest with yourself and say, yeah, that would be a situation where I'd be pretty pissed. And so I understand the anger from him. I ultimately think, again, that they chose the right guy to do this with because Cousins, I think, is going to go ahead and do his best to, you know, be someone Michael Penix can learn from. He's obviously going to try to keep him on the bench for 4 years, which fair game.
Yeah.
But he's somebody who he is that level of professional from everything I've heard and read and seen from him that, you know, he'll take care of business and this won't bleed over into, you know, what's on the field. But yeah, I do feel like it's a thing where I understood his frustration. I understood that he felt blindsided. I understood that this was not the situation he thought he was walking into. So, you know, the money helps erase some of that, but he's still a, you know, he's a dude at the end of the day. So
yeah, like at the end of the day, when you're at this level of success, you have made it to the NFL, you have made a career, there comes an aspect of it that is no longer about the money. It becomes more about your legacy as far as like whether it's MVPs, Super Bowl trophies, like how you impact the game, like how people talk about you once you are gone, you know? And if it's solely just like not trying to compare, I don't think they're the same. But what do we talk about with Matt Flynn? The money. That's it. That's all we ever talk about.
Mm-hmm. And that anytime, one game.
Yeah, that one game, like through six touchdowns, right? But anytime he gets brought up in the context of how much money he got paid to basically do nothing. Right. And that's not, it does not seem like, not like I've never met, you know, Cousins, obviously, but that does not seem like that's the legacy that he wants. Is he's the only player who got the most amount of money guaranteed. And he was a smart, you know, businessman when it came to the business of football. I'm sure he wants to be more known for, you know, the sound bites of, you know, Kirk Chains and, you know, you like that, you know, because those deal with like winning football. You don't get to have those sound bites or those like memes made about you, generally speaking, if you're not winning. Right.
Yeah.
So
I think even for him personally, I think it was just also like, I want to finish my career here. You know, I want to kind of, you know, have stability in this place that I'm familiar with because of my family. And that seems a lot more tenuous at this point. Now it really does feel like a 2-year contract for Kirk Cousins, just pretty cut and dry. At least if any, you know, if at the very least Atlanta, the Falcons are going to be incentivized to make that a 2-year contract more than anything else. Cause if they go any further, it's just, it's going to cost them more. So, I think that's also kind of plays into it. It just makes you uncomfortable in that respect, you know, that you had this idea of what it was going to be. And now it's kind of, it was a paradigm shifting night in a lot of ways. Thursday night was.
Yeah. Well, so like, I look at it this way. if Kirk Cousins, okay, for two reasons, he's 36 years old. Yeah, he's a 36-year-old quarterback at the end of his career, regardless of whether it's 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, he's at the end, right? And as good as he has been from a business perspective, he has to know that whether it's this year, next year, year after, whatever, at some point the Falcons are going to want to look for a successor to him.
Sure, okay? Of course.
They have to. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say it shouldn't sting for this to have gone down. Okay, I'm not going to tell him how to feel. But at the end of the day, it's, yes, these are humans, but also this is a business. And from a business perspective, and on top of that, you're looking at the kind of contract that you agreed to, that you signed, that you obviously saw after 2 years, there was a potential out in that contract for the team that you're going to. There's no ifs, ands, buts about it. Now, if we had signed a fully guaranteed four-year contract, like the last one that he got, where all that money's guaranteed, okay, then I don't think there's a good chance that we may not have made the Penix pick. But because that out's there in 2 years, and he knows it, just like everybody else does, but he has control over, mostly has control over his own destiny. You come out here and ball out like you were playing last year before you got hurt, and you continue that, you're going to keep that rookie from getting to your job a lot longer. And so that incentivizes him to go do that. I'm not saying that he wouldn't have tried to play the best he could, but some argument was brought up about, you know, if you look at the Aaron Rodgers and Love situation, you know, the next 2 years he goes on and wins two MVPs, you know, because maybe he got pissed off enough and he just was like, I'm going to go out here and show you what I got still. And maybe we get something like that from a Kirk Cousins, like that little extra motivation, get that chip on the shoulder again or whatever, you know. But at the end of the day, I don't feel bad for Kirk Cousins because, for one, the guy just got paid $100 million. And he got paid – the man's more rich than he'll ever need to be. So I'm not going to worry about that part of it. You know, from a business perspective, this was a smart move at the absolute – most important position on your team, okay, to shore up the most important position on your team after the last couple of seasons that we've had is nothing short of just, in my personal opinion, is nothing short of just a genius move. You put your succession plan in place. The guy's going to be good to go in 2, maybe 3 years at most, probably. And by that time, even if he only goes 2 years into this contract, he'll be 38 years old. There's been precisely what, one, maybe two other quarterbacks in the entire history of the NFL that have ever, like, legitimately played good that late in their career.
Right.
So, like, it doesn't bother me. You know, I hope that Kirk, like you said, can be the professional that doesn't let it, like, you know, keep, you know, whatever you're feeling, don't let it affect the rest of the team. Yeah. Go out there and be the good quarterback that you've been the past few years. Keep doing that and you're golden.
It's a business, but it's also just sports. It's competitive, you know, and then the NFL is the most competitive sport out there in the world. And so if you consider yourself a competitor, you have to embrace the idea that someone's coming for your job, no matter whether you're the starting quarterback or the left tackle or whatever it is. And that's why these players are so great, is because they do have that level, that edge to them.
Jerry Rice that famously said something about, like, it may not have been Rice or it may have been Chris Carter, talking about, like, the guy behind me is always, you know,
My favorite soccer coach too. He always said, his phrase is like, when you sign a contract, you sign an agreement to receive money in exchange to train, in exchange for preparing yourself the best to play. And then it's up to the coach to decide who plays.
Right. Willie is agreeing with you, Johnson says, so Penix could low key make Cousins more competitive. Who knows? I mean, that's a possibility. Now, we could spend the rest of the night, you know, talking about like Penix and all this other jazz. But I want to bring up one other thing. Did you two gentlemen get a chance, and Jonathan, I don't know if you did or didn't, did y'all get a chance to read Albert Breer's article?
I actually just read it. I had seen it come across, but I just read it right before coming on here, which I'm glad I did.
Yeah, I'm really interested in y'all's thoughts on the idea of Terry being in the room in New Orleans when they thought they had the best kept secret of going to draft Mahomes, and then KC jumps him, and then you get the, obviously, like, you don't get it till years later, but you get the little tidbit that somebody from KC texts somebody in New Orleans saying, got him, you know, like, hi, we knew what you were going to do. Like, Dave, how much you think that, like, really haunts you in a sense? Like, and does, like, I guess I've, the one phrase I've been using all weekend, and maybe I'm, in my mind, it sounds right to me. I may be, other people might be hearing it different, but again, I get the feeling like you're almost drafting scared. Like, I don't want this to happen again kind of thing. Like, so when you read that, like, what was your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think anytime you're talking about drafting scared, that scares you as a fan, right? Like,
right.
You don't want somebody who's, like, haunted by past mistakes to be making decisions based on that. But at the same time, is there an element here? Is there an element there for a lot of executives? Probably, yeah. I think it's interesting in that Breer piece. I had never seen the Mahomes thing validate outside of Sean Payton being like, of course we were about to take him, and the Chiefs just happened to snipe us, which, you know, you can't believe anything Sean Payton says.
No, it's
just,
I won't believe it.
Matter of course for me. Yeah.
Have to have a code.
But I do think, yes, I think the last couple of years, I think being in that situation, and I think being, you know, adding Raheem Morris to the mix here, who's somebody who, in my opinion, had to wait way too long for this opportunity to be a head coach again. You don't want to be left holding the bag in a year or two or 3 years, whatever it is, if you're as competitive as you think you're going to be. And this is where the level of confidence between, like, maybe the fans and the team, like, they're like, we're not going to be top 10 again. We'll see. Right.
No, right.
We have to see that.
But, dude, sidebar, if we're picking 8 again next year, holy crap.
That's
anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, yeah, we might.
Unless we trade up to get to 8.
Oh, that would be even better.
For a pass rusher, please. But I do think that, you know, understanding that and then seeing how they must see Penix, because I thought when they made it, man, they must think this guy is special. And clearly they do, right? Mm-hmm. So when you have that situation, if you're Terry Fontenot and you're like, we just got killed for 2 years by poor quarterback play, you know, it got Arthur Smith fired. I was probably a little bit fortunate to hold on to the job myself. I'm glad they didn't fire him. And then you were in that Mahomes situation and you see a guy that your coaching staff and your front office believes is going to be special. Like, to me, it's irresistible at that point, right? Like, you cannot, like you said in that article, let that man go somewhere else. 2 years from now, Cousins breaks down. Penix is a top level NFL quarterback winning game somewhere. You would be killing yourself for that.
Yeah. You'd be sick.
Yeah.
So I think, like, you know, obviously at the end of the day, if they have their cake and eat it too, we just got a 2027 first round pick in 2024. How lucky are we, right? So that's the way it'll have to be viewed for a while. But moving on into, like, the rest of the draft, in a lot of ways went how we thought it was going to. Starting in the second round with Rook, I am not going to try to pronounce that man's last name because I'll butcher it. I'll sound like I'm trying to make a Scooby-Doo reference or something. Yeah, there you go. I'm glad you did it, not me. But trading up for him, I have to say, like, I sat here and watched film Sunday and watched film yesterday. You know, obviously in preparation for the show, one reason why we didn't do a live recap on Saturdays because I wanted to be a little bit more prepared. I have to say, I'm not necessarily blown away. He seems like a traits pick. Joe, what vibe did you get day two when they were talking about Rook?
Definitely seems that way. And I think that, you know, so here's the thing. I know a lot of people were upset about this trade up, and, like, I don't want to defend it necessarily, but I think I'll give you what I think the front office would tell you, or kind of what their mindset here is, which is that, first of all, I think when they're evaluating players, when they're looking at players and trying to identify that who their true targets are, who they want to bring in to the team, it's for a lot of reasons that I think fans might not put as much like credence into. The Falcons are huge on the character and makeup stuff. Like, that is definitely a thing, and they have a great locker room. Honestly, I think I personally, as like a media person, it's great because it's a bunch of good guys in that locker room. You can talk to almost any one of them. I've never been like turned down or anything for an interview. Not that people care about that, but that's something that is, you know, that plays into it. But also, I think in this case, I think there was something you mentioned, traits, JR. I think that, you know, that is a lot of what this is about in terms of the arm length, the kind of just raw tools that he has as a player. And I think they have a feeling that they can, you know, build him up. But there's only one Ruka Roro in this draft, or at least there's only one player with his traits. And if they want to get that player, well, so they're targeting that player. They're not targeting Johnny Newton, who is a great player in his own right. I think they would tell you the same thing, but he's just not exactly what they were looking for in that draft. And so since there's only one Ruka Roro, you're only going to get one shot to draft him. And if you don't get him, yeah, clearly he was a very important piece to them. So important that they need to move up to like the third pick of the second round or something like that.
Third
or
fourth. They gave up, pick they got from Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they got back a sixth.
But I think the way a lot of people look at these things is, okay, let's assume they didn't trade up, and one of those teams that did go for a defensive tackle after the Falcons, let's say one of them drafts Rook, and then so the Falcons are just left with, you know, whoever is the next available tackle, defensive tackle or whatever. And that's just not that the teams are much more kind of like laser focused in on players they want to acquire, and so they will go take these measures to make sure that they get those guys. And so I think I almost think that people look at it more like a fantasy football type of draft, where it's just like statistical production that you're looking to acquire in a fantasy football draft. And so, you know, if one guy goes off the board that you liked, well, that stinks, but at least there's these other guys that you like. And I just don't know. It seems to me like there wasn't that guy in that kind of pick range for the Falcons. And so that's why they ultimately decided to make the move.
So are you trying to say that our analytics and stats don't matter?
Yeah. That's not what I'm saying. I think they definitely look at those things. But, you know, I think that so it's funny that you bring that up, JR. And this is something that Raheem Morris mentioned in the Sunday press conference, was actually like he called it a study that he conducted with Jeff Ulbrich, who was, of course, here in Atlanta, talking about them finding like a direct correlation between arm length and an ability to shed blocks and be productive ultimately in their careers. And so I think that that is something that they were kind of looking at in that respect. And that's why they valued a guy like Ruka Roro so much, despite the fact that he didn't have this collegiate production.
Right. I think like with a guy like that, you kind of have to, you know, because you have to, if you're trading up, that means to me, you are laser focused. You do not risk the chance of losing this particular player. And if he's your guy, you move heaven and earth to go get him and do what you need to do. And as we have seen, I'll give this, you know, tip of the hat to Terry. Twice now we have seen where they have made a move at a position that you're like, or did something that has you kind of scratching your head. And then the next like 10 picks are all that. And, you know, a few years back, it was Drake London in the first round. You know, they grabbed him the first. We were like, okay, I mean, I get it. But then you had like a ton of like not only wide receivers getting drafted, but then wide receivers getting traded for draft picks. And, you know, so it was like wide receivers were moving like crazy. So I'll give
And I think Terry, you know, talking about that, like I think he's targeted in this second round specifically. He's keeps on moving up in this second round.
Ebiketie,
near the top. Yeah, Ebiketie. Who was it last year?
It was Bergeron.
Bergeron. All right.
Yeah. And Bergeron. Then, like the second round is his sweet spot to make a move. Dave, let's enunciate here. What was your thought on Rook? Were you thinking it was going to be a Johnny Wilson or maybe a Trevondre Sweat? You know, I didn't think Sweat because that DUI kind of.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. He was a guy I liked, but I, you know, kind of thought the consensus was, okay, he's going to go a little bit later. I know Kevin Knight had mentioned to me in the run-up to it, you know, maybe he'll go earlier than we think, but not top of the second round. But I think, you know, one of the things that I kind of immediately saw was like everybody complaining, like he would have been there in the third round. Why would we trade up for him? And I think people need to remember, like, this was like with Bergeron a year ago, you know, you have to go get this guy. And with the run on defensive tackles, clearly he was going somewhere in the next few picks. And the Falcons felt very strongly that was going to happen. They had to go get him. You don't have to love the trade up for the player. You don't have to love the player to be like, okay, you know, they had to go get him if they wanted him. I think he's really interesting. I think he is such a good athlete. I think he's got, you know, a track record of playing all over the line. They really like to move him around in Clemson. He didn't play, you know, a ton of snaps at end or anything like that, but clearly he can do it. It's within his tool set. And I think you're talking about a guy whose best football should be ahead of him. Right. You know, I think we saw some improvement. I think the potential is there for him to be a game changer as a pass rusher. And if nothing else, in a really, you know, semi-crowded, but either not very proven or very old group of defensive tackles, suddenly you're putting this kind of raw wrecking ball in there with the potential to become much more than that. He can play a lot of snaps. You can move him around. He's a really good run defender right now. To me, that's a persuasive case for he's going to be a good player. That's like his floor, and he could be special. So yeah. If you think he can be that caliber of guy, of course you go get him. So it makes a lot of sense to me. I definitely had less of a problem with that pick in that trade probably than a lot of folks that I talked to, but yeah.
Jonathan,
knowing, especially from the Rams days, and just knowing like the kind of defenses they have put together, the kind of players that had been coached up in that defense, seeing him take a guy like this, I look at it as like he almost sees this guy as a blank canvas that he can put his mark on. Or the coaching staff can put their mark on and develop them in the way that they want them to be, right? They don't have to, almost like you'd rather get somebody who's untrained in some, depending on what you're doing, but like almost like somebody who's untrained in something so that you can train them the right way the first time without having to have to break some of the tendencies that they've learned from other coaches and so forth. So, and with this guy's traits, like you said, if he can maximize on those, he could be something super crazy good. And I saw a thing where, you know, when Chris Jones was coming out of college, this is a guy that got like, I think the maximum amount of sacks in a single year he ever got was like 3.5 in college. Like there was nowhere even close to the kind of production that we see now from him. I'm not saying this guy's going to be the next Chris Jones.
I was about to say, I'll quote him down right now.
Just not saying he can't, but it's one of those situations where you just don't know what these guys are going to be. And so they're looking at him and saying that he checks all the boxes for what we want. And none of these other guys do. I was surprised when the pick came in simply because I personally had, if I had seen his name, I didn't remember his name. So I wasn't super familiar with the guy, but when I went and looked at it, yeah, I see some of the weaknesses, but most of the weaknesses I'm seeing are things that are very, very, very coachable things. And I have to put faith in the coaching staff that they'll get those things figured out.
Yeah, he's just raw in that sense. I love this comment from MJ. It says the problem is the Atlanta Falcons have 53 players, 500 fans, and 70,000 general managers.
Stole that from Twitter.
I saw it
on Twitter like 3 days ago.
I didn't see it,
but it's still a good one. I like it.
It's good, and it's true. You know, as far as like
it is.
Dr. Ganja's got a pretty. He says people comp Rook to Matabuke up there in Baltimore. Dude, that's where he ends up. I'm definitely not hating on the Rook pick. Just after watching, you know, some of the film, I'm like, okay, this is obviously a traits player. You know, with the athleticism, the length, all the stuff that we have talked about. And I think that I'll be interested to see how he progresses and how quickly he gets on the field.
I don't need him to be a guy that comes in and gets even 5 or 6 sacks in his rookie year, or even the first couple, 2, 3 years, really. What I want out of him is a guy that can come in and create havoc as much as possible. Generally, probably going to be mostly on the inside, I'm going to imagine, but create as much havoc in the middle as possible and push the pocket as much as possible to free up the Grady Jarrett's of the world, the Onyemata's of the world, potentially the Dorlises and Trices and Ebiketties, and free up those guys to be able to do their thing in one-on-one matchups. You know, force them to have to put 2 or maybe even 3 guys on him so that he doesn't ruin everything. If he can do that and get 1 or 2 sacks here and there, then that is amazing for me.
And I think that he gives you a little bit of kind of mobility on that interior defensive line that you might not have out of David Onyemata and Grady Jarrett coming off of an ACL. So I do think that he, just like the just looking at his profile itself, he does add a little bit something different. Again, he's got that versatility. You can play him as a 3 technique. You can play him as a defensive end and like a 3-4. You can move him around in all different spots. So I think for that reason, to your point there, Jonathan, that you can, your hope is that he just kind of helps accentuate all the pieces that you already have there.
Yeah, yep. That's definitely the feel.
You put it better than I did.
Well, he is a pro.
Yes.
He's a wordsmith. Anyway, so now moving on to the third round pick. And now this one was the one of the only ones that I kind of pegged, and it was, you know, an easier one to peg with his former head coach now being our defensive coordinator. Coaches like players that they are familiar with. That's always been the case. And so with Jimmy Lake being here now, first time NFL DC, he tabs, and I'm going to say he tabs, you know, he tabs Braylon Trice out of Washington, which I thought was a really good pick of a spot that I felt like we could, if we double dipped at edge, that Trice could be the guy that we dipped with. So Joe, I want to start, what was your thought, or was like, what vibe did you get when Braylon Trice came down?
So I want to kind of make a point that's a little bit funny, but like, it was humorous to me to see when he was picked, he was kind of one of the better players available on the draft boards and everything. And then, so when they take him, it's like, oh yeah, great pick. This is great value that we're getting here. All because it basically aligns with this kind of like consensus projection of where these players are going to go. And so it just kind of gives you like a pretext to what you think about this player because of, you know, these things that really don't matter at all.
It's because of mock drafts.
Yeah. Yes.
It's exactly. Because of mock draft simulators.
Exactly. And okay. Yeah, and what mock drafts, honestly. Yeah. And what mock drafts and these kind of consensus boards do, which is set up in your own mind, what is going to happen, or a projection of what's going to happen. And it kind of goes back to the Penix stuff and what Terry Fontenot, I think he mentioned it to Albert Breer, but you can even pick up from his comments that he's made over the past few days, which is like, it's shocking because it's so surprising because you weren't expecting something like that to happen. And that's why, for me at least, it's taken some time for that idea of Penix to kind of settle in. And then, okay, well, if I was approaching the draft with this kind of mindset, or the potential of the Falcons to go this way the entire time, it wouldn't be so shocking to me. And I would probably, you know, might be more on board with it right away. So I just wanted to kind of make that point about Braylon Trice, but obviously the production's there in college. He's, you know, he's got the pressures. He's like, what 150 his last 2 years, kind of ridiculous. Yeah, it's so
like he was number one in FBS in pressures the last 2 years, I believe.
Yeah. 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 So I don't like grind tape too much on these guys. I'm not like a football expert enough to like give an opinion on whether his like club move is going to work in the NFL, is going to translate or whatever, but
rip stab.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But it does seem like good value. Having kind of joked about all that, it does seem like good value just based on the level of production he had at a good program in college and going up against some decent competition out there.
Right. I mean, he was the MVP of their playoff win that got them to the national championship. He was a defensive MVP. He had, you know, a really good game. So Dave, like, you know, I don't know if you were live streaming that night or if you were just in a group chat, but what was the vibe on your end when the Braylon Trice pick came down?
Yeah, I was on, I believe I was on the live show then with Kevin and the group. And, you know, it was very positive. And I made a joke, I think, on Twitter, like, there's nothing like when everybody loves a pick, you know, like, it doesn't happen very often.
No,
and, you know, I go back to 2016, right, where nobody could believe the Keanu Neal pick. They were like, what, Deion Jones this early? And then Austin Hooper, and he was right where he was supposed to be. Everybody was like, oh, Austin Hooper, great pick. yeah, that kind of comes back to what you were saying, Joe, right? Like, yeah. So it was a very positively received pick. And it's also because, you know, he's an edge rusher. And
right.
Yeah.
Good Lord, definitely. You know, did they need to add one of those? And we knew that. So to me, like, you look at, you know, team fit, caliber of player. He's a really good all-around player. I don't know if I see him being, like, a 10-sack guy, except maybe 1 year. I'd love to see it in the NFL. But, you know, you got the familiarity. You've got the talent. You've got the fit. You've got the need, which I know they said they're not going to draft for. And that all conspires to make it a really positive pick. And again, because the last two picks caught people so off guard, it definitely was like the first and maybe only positive. The next one after that.
Yeah, the next one is like, so Josh Gillen brings up an interesting point. He says, does the fact that we didn't go edge in the second, like, you know, second round, so we didn't go edge until the third, does that like really mean that Ebiketie and Carter are going to be our starters? Then he throws in there, you know, Zach Harrison. So like, I don't know how much like I put into that because of the, hey, we did try to trade back up. And we did. Now this brings up another interesting point. They tried to trade back up. They tried to get Danielle Hunter. They tried to get Montez Sweat. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, they done swung and missed so many daggum times on trying to land the guy. But what is this? What do you think this means, Dave, for the guys that are on the roster? Do you think they try to make another move to get a guy in the offseason or the rest of the offseason?
Yeah, I think they do. And the reason is, you know, I think when you're talking about the line, when you're talking about the front in general, you want to be able to rotate guys effectively, right? And to me, Trice pairs really well with Carter in that they're both players who are plus run defenders. Believe I'm not as familiar with Trice in this regard, that he's decent in coverage. We know Carter is good. You would ideally like to get somebody to pair with Ebiketie, who's, you know, more of a maybe a pure pass rusher. And I think there's guys out there who kind of fit the bill there. I am personally a fan of Tyus Bowser. I know that Bud Dupree is still out there. So in my mind, unless you really love, you know, James Smith Williams or D'Angelo Malone, who aren't really giving you much as pass rushers, you go out, you sign another guy, you try to up level this thing. And to your point, the fact that they swung and missed at elite guys suggests that they aren't quite finished here yet, and they're not going to be getting anywhere near that kind of production out of whoever they sign. But I think they know that they can't quite be done, or they'll be, there's that potential once again, even as much as you've added to the defensive line to help with the pass rush, that could be a weakness for you in a year that you don't want a glaring weakness because you have to win.
Right. Joe, you got anything you want to add there?
Yeah. Like, so it's really interesting to see just how the draft fell. And Terry always says this, like, every draft is different, you know, and the quality players at certain positions might be there 1 year and they aren't necessarily the next year. And we've been talking a lot kind of before the draft about how there's this big drop off that happens after the first three edge rushers. There's a big drop off after that. Well, that proved to be true to the point where, you know, after the first round edge rushers went, you know, the next edge rusher that went in the second round was taken with the 56th pick, Marshawn Nyland. And then there was one right after him, Chris Braswell, went with the next pick. And those were the only two real edge rushers that even went in the second round. Mm-hmm. And then the Falcons were basically got the next one in Braylon Trice in round three. So there just weren't really the quality edges to take there. And I think that that's why ultimately they targeted to go after a row. And, you know, what was interesting to me is when I saw the trade up, I thought they were definitely going defensive back. I thought they were going corner because it seemed like that's where the quality was. And Terry was talking about these picks and he was just saying like, you never want to reach, you never want to reach on players. And it was interesting to me that he, I guess it kind of like, I consider that him saying like, it would have been reaching to draft a corner, to trade up in that spot and draft a corner. And so the best value they felt was to take Rook with that second pick. And then, to get the value at the edge rushing spot there in the third. But I agree. I don't think they're done there. And I would say that, you know, obviously there's a lot of anger about this team not acquiring an edge rusher. And I totally get that. Not just them not acquiring that edge rusher, but them prioritizing the quarterback in that first round over the edge rusher. And I would say that, you know, you don't want it to come to this, but, you know, edge rushers do come available more often, especially like if you get off to a great start and you feel like you actually have a shot, very oftentimes, you know, you can potentially make a trade for an edge rusher. We saw two really quality ones or three, on the trade block last year. You've got some older guys around the league. You never know. I know the guys out in LA with the Chargers, Bosa and Mac just signed deals, but you never know when a player might become available. That's just a position where you're more likely to be able to use an alternative route to acquire one. I know I don't want to get back into the quarterback discussion, but that's where they felt the value was.
We made that same
trade our number one next year before the NFL can take it.
Fred echoes a point that we made earlier. He says, Trice had more pressures than Turner and Latu. And that's probably something that made them feel good about, you know, taking Trice in that particular area. But, you know, there's rumors that maybe, a guy like, Trey Hendricks might be available, that you might be able to swing something before camp. So we'll see how that goes. I do think that they may continue to add. Somebody had brought up, you know, that Keo Witherspoon still out on the market. Same thing with Jalen Johnson. Wouldn't be a big shock to see both of those guys come in. But moving right along the line, we go to add yet another defensive line, given we talked about like Terry's history in New Orleans with the Mahomes thing, we'd be remiss not to bring up the, you know, last year, Raheem Morris, what he did on that line with, you know, Kobe Turner and Brian Young, you know, those both, you know, second and third third round guys. Maybe that's what they're leaning on here by double dipping so much. And Chris is giving us a drum roll, our resident Oregon fan, because now we get to talk about another guy that going into this process, I was actually kind of high on early on in the process. He was linked to like even possibly going in the first round. That was very early on. And then it kind of started the dust settle, but we're talking about Brandon Dorlus, who is yet another very like versatile defensive lineman. Now the games I watched three games of his, and he played mainly rushed on the inside shade of the like guard. So the four eye technique, which is, you know, where Grady rushes from quite a bit. So Dave, what was your thoughts when Dorlus came up on the screen?
Yeah, I was a fan of that pick. I love his game, and I love the way he talks about his game. Like some of the post-draft interviews and stuff, like talking about how he likes outsmarting guys and you know, you can't outwork him. Like that's just great stuff to hear. But I also view him as, again, an ideal complement for what they want to do on this line because, you know, kind of looking back at where he played the last couple of years, he played a lot in 2022, I believe, exclusively at end, most of his snaps. But he's also played inside. He's really productive, talented player. So, you know, again, at some point, the question is like, are you sinking too many resources into one area? But I don't really think so. You look at Dorlus, you look at Rook and what they can offer, the versatility they have in year one, so you can move them around a little bit, get the production. And then next year, it's within the realm of possibility, as much as it pains me to say this, that Onyemata is gone. And Grady Jarrett's
gone. Oh, right? I knew you were going to say.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't even want to say it, but yeah. So you also, this is another future contingency planning, right? Like both of these guys can help right now. I'm really optimistic about Dorlus playing quite a bit and playing well in year one, but you're talking about potentially outright replacing guys next year. And I think that's where both of these guys are going to really shine.
Yeah. Like kind of speaking on that, Joe, like, I think it was you know, Kevin Knight was putting some threads on Twitter as we were about to head out or head, you know, do the show here. It really did feel like, did you get the sense that this draft almost felt like, okay, we feel good about our team, you know, what we have done in free agency, the way it's constructed to play right now, which I think they even said. But this draft really did feel like we're looking at the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so
I was making this comparison. Like, I was kind of comparing these picks to the quarterback pick, actually, which is like you're kind of succession planning for this turnover that's going to happen at these positions. Obviously, two really important positions. And again, Dorless, another guy who's kind of got a big frame. I think both he and Roro had two of the fastest 10-yard splits on their 40s in the draft. So I think you can look at some markers and see what the Falcons were looking for out of players in this particular position. And I think that Dorless may have been hurt in some teams' eyes by the fact that he's a bit of a tweener, but I think the Falcons kind of saw that as a bit of a you know, bonus, an added bonus for him to be able to move around in different spots. And Dave, you're right. It's crowded there. It's going to be tough. There's going to be a lot of competition with these guys, but the fact that they can move around, I think that benefits them. And again, you're going to need to take some of the workload off of these guys, because everybody talks about Grady's ACL and how he's going to come back from that. And rightfully so, they definitely should. But I think that something we don't talk enough about is how much time David Onyemata was missing toward the end of last season. He had an ankle and it was just kind of lingering week to week, couldn't really get over it, was just real banged up, because the first half of the year when he was healthy, he was fantastic, and you just want to try to keep in that condition as long as possible.
Yeah, especially as you played last year with, you know, guys like Onyemata and guys like Calais Campbell probably getting more snaps than you originally envisioned them getting. But then you also, like, you're bringing back guys like, you know, Taquan Graham, who you hope, you know, take a step forward, and say, you know, like, retake a step. Like, he was there, then he got injured. You hope he kind of gets back to some of that form, and then you hope that Zach Harrison continues. If all this, like, works out, you should have a pretty good rotation at D-line. But, yeah, I like the Dorless pick. I thought that one yet was another good value, maybe even better value. Like, I really thought Dorless could have went in the third, you know, maybe even back into the second. But I think that tweener thing did hurt him. That has not been as popular since the, you know, cover three Legion of Boom, you know, type defensive has, you know, went to the wayside a little bit in the last few years. But
just one thing I want to bring up, like, one thing that really annoys me when I see people talking about this draft is people are like, well, we didn't come away with any day one starters. And I'm going to say that, like, you know, the Rook pick, the Trice pick, the Dorless pick, all, and even to a certain extent, the Zion pick. If he can make the team, but at the end of the day, like, all of those guys that I just said are going to likely play some part on the defensive line. Like, are they going to be the guys that are out there first snap of the game? Maybe, maybe not. But at the end of the day, like, they're going to contribute to the defensive line, and if for no other reason than to make sure that other guys are getting the rest they need so that they can be fresher longer. And that's what you want. Even if we had gone out and gotten a Latu, Turner, or Verse, those guys, whether they were named starters or not, they're not playing every snap. They're not even going to come close to playing every single snap. So, like, yeah, you're going to have one guy maybe plays like 50%, maybe as much as like 60%, and some other guy's going to play 40% or whatever, but at the end of the day, they're all going to play a good amount of snaps. So whether they are the starters or not, they're going to be out there when, you know, and are going to be expected to contribute no matter what. And right. It just annoys me when I see, especially on the – now, you want to talk about on the offensive side, that's a whole different matter. But on the defensive side, there's so much – especially on the line, there's so much rotation that goes on that whether you're a starter or not is functionally immaterial. It doesn't matter.
No, agreed. Willie Doc, we appreciate you greatly, as always.
Cheers, sir.
He says, can you opine how the Morris Fontenot style is different from the Smith Fontenot style, draft style? Which that was an interesting question. And then he follows it up with, since it's been 3 years, how's the 2021 draft looking now? So the 2021 draft, that would be the Kyle Pitts draft, right? Make sure I'm not
getting that wrong. Yeah.
Okay. So starting Dave, what do you, okay, in now that the draft is done, do you see a difference in style from like the Smith era to the first era of the Raheem draft?
I think the it's so hard to say after one draft, right?
Right.
Like, yeah. Can you really apples to apples? No. But I think what you're seeing, the big difference is it's not so much in philosophy, because I still think this more than any other draft drove home for me best player available, right? Because they did not pick guys that we thought were necessarily the best players available there. They picked who they thought. But I think the extreme focus on the defensive front reflects like that priority for Morris as the head coach to come in here and say, we need these guys up front for a succession plan just to make this unit better here today. That's a big change. Like that single-minded focus was definitely noticeable. I think we're going to need to see another draft or two before we can say, oh, this philosophy is different with Morris here because of X, Y, and Z. I just don't know if we've seen that yet.
And what's your like overall grade on the 2021 draft?
I was trying to, without looking up, I was trying to go back and remember.
So it was Kyle Pitts. It was Richie Grant. Yeah. Third round was
Jalen Mayfield.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Darren Hall.
Then you got
Darren Hall.
He's, no, right. He's not, then you got, was Dalman fifth round?
Or yeah. No, he was still fourth round.
They had two fourths there.
Okay. And so, then,
yep.
So you Ogundeji, who might be cut. Like he's been MIA. Maybe now going back to a 3-4 might benefit.
Taquan Graham. Yeah, Taquan Graham.
Graham was in the fifth.
For him. Yeah. Yep. Ogundeji was taken after him.
So outside of
Avery Williams.
Yeah. Probably at one point in time was the best, you know, punt returner in the league.
Yeah.
Well, he was until he got injured last season. Like, it's not like the last time he played on a football field, he was the best returner in the league. So thank you very much.
MJ says, I don't even eat Mayfield ice cream no more because of look, you don't want your quarterback here. Draft him. No, that was a rough one as far as like Jalen Mayfield became a butt of a joke. But I mean, you really are like, it's hard to say these last 2 years with Kyle Pitts because of the QB play. This year is going to be a big, I mean, they picked up his fifth year option. So they, at least on the surface, feels like they feel like he's going to look more like the rookie Kyle Pitts versus what we have seen the past 2 years. Richie Grant, like Raheem spoke highly of him as far as his film. So we'll see how they didn't take a safety like many of us thought they would.
Mm-hmm.
Like nowhere in the draft did they take a safety. So you know, they obviously have some faith in him / DeMarco Helms. So, I don't know. I'd say right now, we'll see who gets, like, you can really judge it by second contracts that are signed by the team. But I feel decent enough about it, you know. I think so. I saw somebody say C in the draft or in the chats. I don't know. I'd say maybe a B, you know. I think it's especially
– because you got Kyle Pitts, Richie Grant, first two picks. Those are both going to be starters this year, likely. Mm-hmm. Okay, unless we go out and get John Johnson or somebody else. But the chances are Richie Grant, even if he's not a starter, he's going to play a lot of minutes. But he's been a starter for a couple of years. Jalen Mayfield, Darren Hall, they're no longer here. Drew Dahlman's your starting center.
Right, and he's getting better. So.
And he's gotten better every year. Taquan Graham is a guy that you think is going to hopefully contribute more.
But he was a fifth round pick, wasn't he? Taquan Graham.
Yeah,
fifth round pick. He even sticks on the roster.
But like, and then Avery Williams. So out of 1, 2, 3, 4, looks like 9 picks, you had 5 that are like serious contributors to this day. you know, will likely be some serious contributors into this season at the very least. So that's not a bad draft. Like, you got over half your picks that are still on the team and that are still somewhat contributing to the team's success.
Let me ask you guys this. Do you think Kyle Pitts will get a second contract in Atlanta? Do you think he'd sign Atlanta for a second year or for a second contract?
I think so. It may not be.
They just signed Charlie Warner to 3 years, which I thought was interesting that they're like, he's like a longer term option for them right now than Kyle Pitts is on their current contracts.
You're not wrong, but I think
this year is going to be so telling. So I think it's a lot of it's physical about, you know, how healthy is he? Can he run the routes and do the things that we want him to do? I couldn't tell you whether it's yes or no at this point, but
I got a t-shirt that up in the air, I think, is a little
interesting. What's that?
So I got a t-shirt of him, so I hope that he's still
right. Yeah.
I'll have to put it somewhere. Dave, what do you think? You think do you think it hinges a lot on this year?
Yeah, I think it absolutely does. I mean, he's got 2 years potentially. They picked up the option. Obviously.
Yeah, they picked up the option. Right. I guess so they got this year, next year.
Yeah,
but I think, like, if you're thinking about, like, there's a lot of guys who are on a maybe 3 year timeline right now, because how are they going to mesh with Penix? Mm-hmm. Right. So you want to see Pitts this year more so, I think. And then next year, is he contributing at the level we want him to? Is he staying healthy? Is he going to be one of those high end weapons that Penix is inheriting? And so I think this year is really, really important for him. And I think the good news for him is if he's healthy, he is not going to have passes that are somehow impossibly sailing 3 feet over his head. The guy's like 9 feet tall, but yeah, this keeps happening.
A 5 mile wingspan and somehow.
They drafted him for his catch radius. And like, even that's not enough. Like, it's kind of a cruel joke. With Cousins, he should have an opportunity to have the kind of huge year that he should have had last year, the year before. So,
yeah. And it's such a good point. I think it underscores a lot of, you know, like, just, we don't know so much about what this Falcons offense can be because we haven't seen it executed by, you know, a competent quarterback play. And and so I think for that reason, I still think people tend to underestimate how much of a difference next year's team, how different it's going to look and how much of an impact Kirk Cousins is going to make. I hear a lot of, you know, conversation with the Penix pick. Well, why do we need Cousins if we're going to draft Penix? It's like, well, because I think you're going to get pretty top tier, close to it, quarterback play this year, which is going to make an absolutely massive difference in the way this team's able to operate on the field.
I tend to agree there as far as whether he's properly motivated or not. We can get in, like, we already got into all that, but as far as just consistent QB play, you haven't had that since, you know, Ryan was, you know, left for Indy, right?
Can I say one more thing while we're talking about the quarterbacks? Possibly. And again, this is because, you know, people talk about Cousins and Penix. I think it's a fair question. In fact, a reporter asked it today in Kyle Smith's press conference about, like, well, if Penix was your guy, why'd you sign Kirk Cousins? Because you could have just drafted Penix. And first of all, that's kind of a hypothetical scenario that isn't, like, it's not so cut and dry, because imagine yourself as a Falcons fan going into that draft without a quarterback, like, without having signed Kirk Cousins. You just got
Taylor Heineke. Taylor Heineke is your QB
You're having a much different feeling and outlook on the team.
Yeah, you would be having a conversation about how desperate you were, and that's why you picked Penix.
But I think even more importantly is if you just got to look at the devil's in the details with Kirk's contract and how that kind of interplays with Michael Penix, basically, you know, getting that cheap rookie deal. And I did some, you know, napkin math this year towards the quarterback position. The Falcons will have about 36 million of cap. That's, and they could be a little bit few million higher or lower, but about 36 million, 45 for next year, and then 40 for 2026 if they were to cut Kirk Cousins and take about $35 million in dead cap. And then about 22 and a half for 2027, assuming you sign some mid-tier backup. And then you would have Penix's fifth-year option for 2028 at like 25 to 30, whatever that ends up at. But basically, you're not paying an exorbitant amount at the position really for the next 5 years. I know that a lot of people will say, like, ah, you want to have the rookie deal. You want to have the rookie,
you know, maximize deal. That's the new buzz thing.
To help build the team. But I think that's basically the hedge that the Falcons made was, we're not even going to like worry about really having a super cheap quarterback. We already tried that. That was the Ritter gambit and it failed miserably. So let's just hedge our bet here and do our best to have, you know, above average to high quality quarterback play, and we'll pay a fair price for that.
Right.
And I think one thing that I would add too, that, you know, hasn't really been talked about to this point, is the thing with taking Penix too, even though I think you could argue that maybe he's ready to start now, is if you believed that you wanted to get Penix in and give him some time, not only to grow, but also to reconfigure the offense, because he's a left-handed quarterback and you mm-hmm. have to think about that. You would give yourself maybe a couple of years from a personnel perspective to do that. So there is that element too.
Oh yeah. And like, they're hedging their bets. Like, it's so funny to see a coaching staff truly hedge their bets that they're going to be here in 5 years. Like, I know that's like, ha ha ha, but you know, that's really what they're doing, you know, is we're trying to win now. And I get all that. Hey, we've got to win now. Need to put a product on the field, but we also don't want to, because that was, as I've said plenty of times, that was my biggest issue with the Cousins signing, was that in 3 to 4 years you're doing this again. And now they're saying, no, we're not. You know, we believe in this guy and we're not going to. But like I said, you know, it's a 2027 first round pick, and I'll be excited to see it that year. But now we're going to, as we've already busted over an hour, so I don't want to spend too much more time, you know, taking up you guys' night. But we picked linebacker out of Notre Dame, J.D. Bertrand. Running back out of Alabama, Jace McClellan. Yeah, McClellan. Everybody knows how great I am with names. Then you got Zion Logue.
I've been saying Logue. I don't know if that's right or not.
Okay, no, you're probably right. I'm going to say, I actually stumbled across a TikTok of one of his teachers today for some odd reason, which was a really nice, touching story. I think she said Logue. Anyway, he, out of those last three picks, J.D. Bertrand was interesting. Seems like I kind of thought it was hilarious that Raheem Morris called him Captain America. I thought that was great. You know, that was a good sound bite.
He's also a local boy.
I was about to say, Georgia native. You know, I thought that was
I'm
good.
Biased. He went to my high school. So I think there you go. The best pick of the draft. Yeah.
Right. Joe's
first one in my high school to ever be drafted in the NFL. Yeah.
Somebody said up in chat, I wish I could find it again. I meant to star it, but apparently, like, he had a crap ton of quarterback pressures. This is going to be like the all pressure team. Like, he had 30-some-odd pressures for Notre Dame last year. Well, I didn't even realize
that. And Brandon Dorlus, like, he led the nation the last 2 years in pressures from the – as far as defensive tackles go.
Right. So it's going to be like the all-pressure squad. What are we saying, Joe?
Yeah, and as with J.D. Bertrand, I know the Falcons just absolutely are obsessed with his makeup, and it's a lot of has been made about, you know, his background and stuff. But he's got this kind of mentorship group that he's a part of with James Laurinaitis, who is his – linebackers coach at Notre Dame, and obviously a great linebacker in the NFL for a long time, played in Ohio State, and then also Luke Kuechly and Sean Lee, the old Cowboys linebacker. I guess they're all in like a kind of a mentorship group. They talk regularly and stuff, and so they just love the fact that he's already got that level of professionalism about him to kind of link up with those guys and, you know, to really take seriously, like, you know, their tips, whether that's like how to prepare yourself physically or mentally or whatever. It's just, that's the kind of stuff that reeks of a guy who's going to be able to make it in the league for a while, even if it's just as like a special teams guy. In fact, I think that they've kind of identified him immediately off the bat in a way he can contribute is helping on this new kickoff, just right. kind of running yep. down, you know, tacklers.
No doubt on that. Dave, what did you make of the Alabama running back? Like, I kind of chuckled there, like, we weren't going to come out of this draft without a running back, because, you know, that, but even if it was in the, you know, 6th, 7th, whatever round, but adding him to the running back room, is there anything that stands out there?
Yeah, I liked it actually quite a bit, because when you're looking at, you know, building your running back room, ideally you have guys who can do everything well, right? But that it rarely happens that that's the case. But now you have Bijan, who needs to maybe work on his pass protection, but, you know, obviously dynamic runner, growing pass catcher. Algier has shown you he can do a little bit of everything. And I think that's kind of McClellan's calling card, right? Like, he's not going to be great in any one area, but he comes into the league, I think, pretty advanced in pass protection. He can catch, and he's a solid runner. So if you have to rely on him down the line because of injury for some reason, you're getting a fairly well-rounded guy. And I thought it was interesting that they appear to be trying to stack that all the way down the depth chart rather than this guy is super fast, this guy's a great pass catcher, but, like, you know, rather than just having a guy who's really good at one thing, you're hopefully building in some redundancies if you have to turn to these guys for big snaps.
Yeah, instead of go ahead, Jonathan.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, you definitely, like, if you can have it, having all three of your guys that can, even if they're not great at any, like, they're one of the aspects they're not super great at, but at least they can do it. You want all three of them to be able to do everything. Cause like you said, if you, you know, back in the day, you'd always have the little scat back guy. Like, and whenever he came in, chances are you weren't running the ball. You were, like, he was going to go out into a pattern on the flat or something like that. And he probably wasn't going to be doing a lot of, like, pass protection, especially for the smaller guys, because they were small guys. So, yeah, having – I was surprised, like to coming out of Alabama and, you know, like, the times I saw him, he looked like a really good runner. And so I was surprised that he was still there at that time. So I was super happy to see him. And my nephew, actually, I was in a text chat with my brother, both my brothers and my mother and my nephew. And he was like, but why did we pick a running back? And I was like, well, I mean, we still needed a third running back, and we were going to get one, whether it was here or in the as an undrafted free agent. So, you know, we needed to get one. And this guy seems like he's a pretty good running back. So this is not a bad pick to make here. So.
All right, over under on if Zion Logue takes more snaps than Eddie Goldman.
Great question. That's a great question.
Because when I first looked into him, I was like, all right, because I made a joke. Somebody on stream was like, we were talking about, you know, always, you know, like, you got to draft Georgia Bulldogs, ha ha ha. And they were like, well, who's left? And at that time, I was like, I think there's a DT left, because I was blanking on his name. And sure enough, we pick him. And then when I look more into him, I'm like, okay, this guy's pretty much a nose tackle. Like, he's a space eater. You know, he's not going to get, he's leaning on people, you know, throughout the game. So I thought to myself, I was like, okay, cool. You're hedging your bets that Eddie Goldman, like, you're not putting your eggs in that retirement basket yet again. So, like, how smart did you think that pick was, Joe, as far as, like, adding to that DT yet again?
I mean, it's fine. Like, these are guys who, if the Falcons don't draft him, they could have maybe picked him up as a UDFA. You know, it's depth, but it's probably smart, and it kind of ties in with this theme of, you know, just bolstering that defensive front. And even JD Bertrand, you know, is kind of part of that front. I'm thinking more. I keep thinking about that the bet of the over under.
I'm gonna say Dr. Don just says over, and so does Chris.
Over for Zion to take.
Yeah,
more
for Zion taking more snaps. They're taking the
for
over.
For some reason, there's this, like, inkling in me that thinks Eddie Goldman's gonna have this comeback. I know it sounds silly because of what's happened.
At this junction, like the way things tend to play out with me, when I go hard in on something, like, especially on, like, hard in on a joke, I tend to have to eat crow about it.
Right, right.
like the latest one was you know, CP84, right? That whole summer I was, like, anytime somebody would bring him up in the chat, I'm like, oh, he's just a returner. Don't worry about it. Yeah. And, you know, like, I would not give him any credence whatsoever. And, of course, he's the offense for 2 years, you know. So I had to eat crow on that one. And so I'm pretty sure, like, Zion's going to be, like, just a force in the middle that we haven't seen since, like, Albert Haynesworth or something. I don't know, because that just seems
Where's
to be
Golden out. Nation out there. Stand
yeah,
up.
Yeah, that's represent. What I mean. Yeah, Golden. Yeah, like, Goldman's gonna be. He's gonna, like channel. That's what I meant. I didn't mean to say Zion. I meant Goldman. Like,
I really hope he watches like 3 years of shows, reads 3 years of articles to pump himself up. Yeah. You know, he's like, yeah. Nobody believes in me because I retired twice. Well, not three times. You know,
he comes out with like some kind of like for his first time talking to the press. He's going to make a comment about like, I thought this humidity was going to be bad or something.
Yeah. and you'll know. Yeah,
that's right. They're like, snap. Okay. Maybe I stay way up on the hill at training camp. Don't get within eyeshot of Eddie Goldman. So, but yeah, all in all, like what vibe, I mean, I'm not asking for a grade or nothing like that. We sit here the Tuesday after the draft. Dave, do you think this team improved for 24 after this draft? Because that seems like to be even one of my biggest gripes, you know, and so I'm trying not to be, you know, negative man. But do you think this team improved in the areas that they needed to improve in?
Some of them. Yeah. So I think that the improvements up front are going to make a bigger difference than we think they will. And I think going back to the earlier comment about like they didn't draft any year one starters, like at least three of these guys are going to play a ton and they're going to be impactful if all goes to plan. So I think they are better than they were. And I think they have a better long-term outlook with this class than they did. Of course, that's harder to quantify now, but I think where my hesitation comes in with this is really just like, where did you not get better? Where are you really trusting that you're going to get somebody this summer or coach guys up? And to me, they left a few trouble spots, right? Like, I don't feel super about the offensive line depth at this point. I don't feel necessarily great about, you know, safety and corner. So I think they're a better team than they were before the draft. I think that the weaknesses still remain to me, you know, are something that still might define the season. And that's going to determine how we look at this draft is if the secondary falters, if your line gets decimated and you're in big trouble, you're going to be like, you screwed up.
Right.
You know, that's kind of inevitable.
Joe, same question. Do you feel like they are better in 2024?
Is this after the draft specifically?
Because yeah, I think
I think they're much better because of Kirk Cousins. I would say they're not better after the draft, and that's a comparatively speaking to the rest of the league, because every team gets players in the draft that's going to help them, right? But I think that compared to their competition, probably they're not that much better than other teams got better. But I would say that they're in a better position now, competitively speaking, relative to their competition than they were at this point last year. If you just look at the betting markets, like the betting markets have the Falcons as a decent favorite in this division. I think this time last year, they were slightly in second. They trended like right behind, I think it was the Saints that were the NFC South leader for most of the offseason. I can't remember if that was correct or not, but and they underperformed too. So
Chris, Chris brings up the point, you know, the implied odds of the Falcons making the playoffs next season, you know, betting markets have them set at like the fourth highest in the league at 73%. So whether we feel like they have made improvements or not, the people who actually have money on the line feel like they have, you know, improved their team in a like, you know, significant fashion. Dave, you spoke of like cornerback and safety. Is there one move in free agency still like this, what some might consider to be the second wave? Like, is there one move that you're like, okay, look, before we hit training camp, y'all got to add X to the roster?
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one because it's almost, you could go sign with Witherspoon right now, right? And I'd feel pretty good about that because he's still a pretty good starter. He played a ton for the Rams last year, so he knows this coaching staff. So that's a guy that you could sign right now, and that would be great. I think otherwise, what you're talking about is really looking at where you're at in training camp and saying, did Clark Phillips take a leap in year two? Do we feel good about starting him outside? / do we feel like Antonio Hamilton's a good fallback plan there? Is D. Alford back in favor as your nickel? Is Richie Grant really the starting safety? Do you feel good enough about where he's at? And I think those are big question marks for me personally. I think the coaching staff is probably going to want to spend more time with these guys before they make that decision. But I think it'll be a clue for us if in the next week or so, obviously, if they sign a guy like Witherspoon, it's like, okay, all that talk about how great they're feeling about these guys. Yeah, it's not backed up. But I tend to think it'll be a summertime type move that we see.
Right. Joe, same question. You think there's one thing that they got to add?
Yeah, I totally agree with what Dave said there. I think that the kind of weaknesses of this team are pretty obvious right now. In fact, you could almost like do a mock draft or say like, okay, I know the top three
mock
picks
draft. For this team. Hold on. You're talking about a 2025 mock draft.
Yeah, there you go. You know, it's going to be like right tackle, corner, safety. Yeah. It's like, you could almost predict what's going to go down there now. Which is kind of funny, but, I would not think that they're going to happen immediately unless it's one of these players that this staff is familiar with, like Witherspoon, and then we'll see. But I would expect some sort of free agency signing, potentially even a trade of like a fifth round pick or something. That's something that they've tended to do, whether that was with like Jeff Okuda or Brian Edwards or something like that. So even something like that could be on the table.
Yeah. I think going like before you hit camp, you know, like truly hitting training camp, I think you might go through OTAs or whatever, but I think before you hit camp, I could easily see a move for a corner, a safety, and even an edge, whether it's bringing Calais Campbell back, like Dre Murphy's talking about bringing back Calais Campbell or Bud Dupree. Well, according to it was a Trice, I think it was, his Instagram, he's already selected number 48, which if I'm not mistaken was Dupree last year. So that might give you an indication on that, and you know whether Dupree's coming back or not. But guys, I appreciate y'all like a lot. We did it. We wrapped up the draft. Now it's going to be time to figure out really how all these guys fit, and are, you know, is everybody still mad and crazy as we move into OTAs and things of that nature. So Dave, tell the folks where they can find you at.
We're at the Falcoholic.
Uh-oh. We lost Dave.
Is that a mic drop? Is this like,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
At the Falcoholic.
You've never heard of it. Oh.
Well, if he doesn't come back, you can find Dave at the Falcoholic. And you can find him on Twitter at the Falcoholic. He is Mr. Falcoholic. I don't know. We're going. If he pops back up, I'll throw him on there. If not, we'll just wrap up for him. Joe, tell folks where they can find you.
Yeah, sir. You can find me on Twitter X at jpatrick200. Twix is what Mike Twixine called it. Yep. And 929 the game. Just check us out. We had our most listened to day ever the day after the Penix pick.
Oh, I would imagine.
I don't doubt it.
The most listened to, like the most listened days, are day after Penix, day after Arthur Smith fired, and then I think it was day after 28-3. Personally, maybe in that respect, prefer just to not have so many high listen days, but you know, nobody listens when they're happy. They're out doing
when they are out for blood, that's when they that's when they listen. They want to
I listened a little bit Monday, like late in the day Monday. So I was listening to Dukes.
Yeah,
I can't remember the guy that was on with him.
But it's Chris Thomas, the producer.
Chris Thomas.
Turtle, yeah.
And he, that dude just, got under my skin.
I disagree with him quite a bit about his reaction to this draft. Yeah, but sorry, go ahead.
He was saying, but Dukes, I think, was just doing a really good job of laying out the reasoning why, and he had been talking about it beforehand. Like, it wasn't like this was he was not necessarily surprised, because he'd been talking about like, it might happen, you know? but he did a good job of really like putting it in a way that a lot more people could understand why this move was made, and I think he helped a lot of people kind of come to grips with it. So it was a very you know, it was cool hearing that, because I was like, I'm not even going to listen to talk radio for like until the season starts. Yeah. You know, I just may not even mess with it, because I just did not want to hear it. But I heard some callers call in, and they were like, I was mad as hell Thursday night, all through the weekend. But, you know, I've been sitting here listening to you, and, you know, I've kind of come around to it a little bit. Maybe some people were still like, look, I don't like the pick, but I'm not so, like, pitchforks ready to storm Flowery Branch anymore, mm-hmm. Which is fine. Like, if you don't like the pick, you don't like the pick. I have no problems with somebody who doesn't like the pick. They thought maybe they should have gone this way or this way or that way or whatever. But at the end of the day, like, and I'm not trying to do this to like bury JR, but like when I hear the term, drafting scared, your house. when I hear the term drafting scared, to me, drafting Michael Penix at number 8, in this year, when you just signed your quarterback who's going to be your quarterback for at minimum the next 2 years, probably the next 3. Okay. But right after that, that is like the exact opposite to me, because you have to know. And I think that's the reason why you felt that way when they came into the press conference that first night, because they knew like they're going to hammer the hell out of us. Mm-hmm. We are going to catch hell for this pick. But I think that they still, like, even then it's like you have the conviction that you feel this is the guy. And I saw a quote out there floating around in the ether. That's basically like, if you find yourself in a position to take a franchise quarterback, you take him, even if you don't need him.
Mm-hmm.
Because how often are you going to get that opportunity? And, you know, you'll eventually get one again, but how many years are you going to be sitting there waiting for that opportunity? And especially now with the inflation has now hit draft trades, because, like, to get up into that top 3, 4, 5 is really exorbitant. So you'd have to give away a ton. You know, people thought we gave away assets in this draft to move up to number 2 or move up to 35. Like, the amount of assets we've had to give away just to get up to whether it's 1, 2, 3, 4 or 5, like, mm-hmm. any of those picks would have made everybody here probably faint.
Well, like, mm-hmm. that was the point I made leading up to the draft. You're going to have to do one or the other. You're going to have to give up a king's ransom to move up, or you're going to have to pay a hefty price for a quarterback, you know, and I just didn't necessarily expect them to they didn't do both. They didn't give up a king's ransom for Penix. I just didn't expect them to do both in the sense of using the high asset of a first round pick, the high value of that asset on a first round pick, and also pay a high price for even though it was market price, but, you know, then pay market price for a starting quarterback. But that's why
they double dipped, just like they did with the defensive line.
Shoot, like they quadruple dipped on the defensive line, but no. They got greedy.
Well, anyway. It's funny. Sorry. Go ahead, Jared.
No, I was going to say, like, but that's why, like, at the beginning of the show, I made the caveat, because I when I say drafting scared, I think the words I'm using aren't conveying what, like, the thought process that I actually have. I just don't know any other way to yeah. phrase it, because somebody else made that same point that, you know, this is actually a really ballsy move mm-hmm. to sign Cousins and draft Penix. Mm-hmm. This is not something the league does. It is unorthodox in that thinking. So therefore it is a ballsy pick. That is not a scared move. But, like, I'm looking at it through the lens of, you know, people are like, oh, well, you know, if Kirk Cousins doesn't come back healthy, okay, well, then you shouldn't have signed him, if that's your fear. Like, mm-hmm. if you're making this move out of fear that you're going to miss out on a franchise QB. You know, that's where I was going.
I've started to think of it as like an aggressively conservative move, or like an aggressive hedge, because it's aggressive in the draft capital that you're allocating towards it. But I think it's a hedge that makes a lot of sense. Again, when you go back and look at Kirk Cousins' contract and you think about what they'd be on the hook for money wise if they get out of that after 2 years, they're never paying more than $45 million a year for their quarterback room. And like, that's about the market price for
that's the market price this year. Next year, like when whoever's up next for their deal, the next one that signs is going to blow, you know, $45 million out of the water.
They'll all be records because the salary cap keeps going up and these things are negotiated salary cap. Yeah.
At the end of the day, and we'll wrap it up with this, at the end of the day, if their plan works, they're geniuses. If it doesn't work, they're looking for jobs anyway. And so knowing that that's the gamble that you take, even in a normal year, like, why not make the swing that you think is the best for the team? And, you know, the thing that you think is the best, you know, way to build the team. If you're going to essentially be held, your feet held to the fire, regardless of what you do, you know, whether it's by fans, whether it's by media, whether it's by owner, it doesn't matter. You know, if you don't go out and win, this is all for naught anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, so, you know, you did what you thought you needed to do to win now and win later, which, if I'm not mistaken, has been Terry Fontenot's ethos since day one,
mm-hmm.
not day one of this offseason.
Yep.
Like day one, talking about, like, way back with Matt Ryan, we want to win now and build for the future. And so this time, this is one of the first times that I can truly say that's what they're trying to do in this draft and this free agency. They're trying to win now and win in the future. We'll just have to see if it's a success. So
I smile because it's so funny. Whenever we talk about this, the last thing we always say is, we'll see. And we'll see. In 2 years. We'll see. We have 2 years to say, we'll see.
Yeah, no, we'll be talking about it. Like, and somebody brought up an interesting point, and I keep dragging. Somebody said something about, like, you know, right now, Cousins probably ain't going to be throwing to nobody in OTAs. And so, and then Heinicke thrown to people, it's going to be Penix thrown to people.
Yeah.
You know, throwing to Pitts and throwing to, go ahead.
From what it sounded like today, it sounded to me, and I should have asked more clearly, like, it was he throwing, but we didn't talk to any pass catchers, but it sounded like they're doing at least some semblance of throwing or running routes. I mean, Chris Lindstrom talked about him being out there working with the wide receivers. And it's kind of funny. Lindstrom's like, I don't know what the hell they're talking about, cause I don't understand that language of all the routes and stuff, but I can tell that they're like talking at a really high level.
Like, really detailed. Yeah. Good.
Well, it's probably the absolute craziest thing that has come out since the Michael Penix pick. This is an actual truth now. Colin Coward had a good take on the Penix pick.
I'll say this. This
is one of the rare, very rare times that I hear something from Coward, and I'm like,
I'm wondering, like,
I'm with you, man. Same.
Part of it makes me worry with, like, when you get sound bites like that from Coward, and then you get an A draft grade from D. Orlando Ledbetter. I'm like, oh God, this is like somebody broke the seventh seal of the apocalypse. I don't understand. Like I saw that, and granted, I don't pay for the AJC, so I didn't read the article, but I saw the headline and I was just like, oh, I probably should be worried now.
I think both of them, it's Coward especially. I think Coward saw the majority of media out there, like, where, what direction were they going? Oh, yeah,
and pivoting.
And then he was like, I'm going to pivot the other way, and that's going to get me clicks.
Yep.
You know, and I have no doubt about it. But the argument he made in that, you know, clickbait, you know, argument was very, a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, like, put into words some of the things that I was feeling. So, like, whether it was a an actual true, like, how he thought about it. Because he was very much in the same boat as me, where I'm like, Kirk Cousins, you were rich before you even got here. We just gave you $100 million. You deal with it. You're also an old player.
Yeah.
So it's not like you should be in any way. And the only thing he was surprised about was where, because his people even said, like, look, we knew that they told us that QB was in consideration. The fact that they took him at 8 was the surprise. Right, so, like, right. He's not even necessarily surprised that we took a QB. He's surprised where we took him.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like, if I'm Kirk Cousins at 36 years old, I just got paid a bunch of money. Let me come in here. Let me show my thing. Let me do my thing, and then we're good to go.
Can I say, I know we're keep on having to try to wrap, but
hey man,
some good points. Hey,
it's y'all's world. I'm just sitting here.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, Jonathan, because, like, you know, again, the Falcons wanted to trade up to get that edge rusher in the first round, and I think they definitely would have framed it as, you know, okay, we got our edge rusher and we got our quarterback that we wanted. And if you flip those around, you know, if you're mad about us, you know, taking the quarterback at 8, well, just pretend like we flipped it around. We took the edge rusher first and maybe you'll feel better about it.
Right.
But, obviously that didn't end up happening, but I do think it goes to the point where it's just like, oh, I don't know what led me to that, but I did want to mention it. And it is also kind of interesting to see, like, what happened in Minnesota where, you know, they double dipped the quarterback this offseason too, and they ended up with JJ McCarthy and Sam Darnold. So I'd much rather be in the Falcons position if you're going to double dip.
Oh yeah. Like, definitely, for sure. Like, my whole deal was, like, I wasn't mad at the pick per se.
Right.
You know, I was more like flabbergasted by the process, and it's more flabbergasted by the process because it's not one we have seen executed very often.
Yeah.
And executed with success. Right. Yeah. And so I get why the vast majority of us were upset, I guess is the right way. But Chris puts it interesting, like, 2 or 3 years of QB development with Penix, you know, is interesting and exciting.
And in Breer's column, they said that, you know, Penix seemed open to this situation, and by virtue of the fact that he, you know, did the workout with the Falcons, and I think there was some other...
And JJ McCarthy.
Yeah. And like other McCarthy, quarterbacks were turning it down. Yeah. McCarthy, Drake May both turned down these workouts because they didn't like the situation. Didn't want to kind of get the Falcons interested. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's, we'll see how it all pans out at the end of the day. We'll see, right? We'll see. It's going to be the new tagline. We'll see.
We shall see.
But, you know, if they win, we won't be worried about this. And it's as simple as that. If they don't, we'll be talking about a new regime, but we're talking about one after 3 years. Why? Because they didn't get the QB play right and they didn't win. So we'll see how it all goes. All right, folks, as always, y'all can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grimm1128, GRIMM1128. We'll be back live here next Tuesday. May even do something on Friday. Who knows? I may even throw a short standing at the Flowery Branch, Home Depot. I was going to do it in front of the Falcons, because I was that Home Depot was literally like 3 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
You know which one y'all talking about. But what stopped me was it was 7:56 in the morning and there's a school right across the street.
Yep. Yep.
And I was like, there is no way on God's green earth that I'm going to be in the middle of all that trying to film a 35-second dumb YouTube show for craps and giggles.
You're like a crazy person. Yeah.
Right. With a work truck behind me looking like a true psychopath. But, you know, so I did, you know, one little bit better. It was the Home Depot in Flowery Branch.
Classy. It was classy.
You know, I was on my way to Gainesville. I was like, I had to stop at Home Depot. It just happened to work out, and I was like, oh, this would be funny. At least I thought it was funny. So keep your eye on the channel, because there may be more shenanigans such as that throughout. You never know. I might pop up in front of Mercedes-Benz looking for answers. Who knows? But appreciate y'all. Joe, you told everybody they can follow you on.
Yep.
And how's the Atlanta United?
Oh, yeah. 5stripefinal.com, too. That's if you follow Atlanta United, follow us over there.
There you go. Jonathan.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi.
There you go. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.